Welcome to Celebrity Book Club,
the podcast where we read the memoirs of pop culture icons so you don't have to.
I'm Carrie.
I'm Kara. And today's book is Inside Out by Demi Moore.
Demi Moore. I've been singing that in my head all morning. Just Demi Moore's name to the tune of Gimme More by Britney Spears.
Well, it's funny that you say that because the press sort of dubbed her that after this article came out on her. So I'm sure you've seen, we'll talk about it at length later, but I'm sure you've seen the Vanity Fair cover photo of her pregnant, naked.
Yes.
She and Annie Leibovitz were actually like friends. And so they were like doing all these different photos for this cover shoot that was a cover story on her. And she had like photographed her and Bruce Willis's wedding. And so she was like, can I take some pictures? It was like, you know, like a mutually agreed upon decision of like, can I take some like pregnancy photos of you, like for your family? And Demi was like, sure. So that was the photo they ended up using. And I don't know if you remember the like cultural moment. I was a little too young because I think it happened like right as I was born. But there was like a lot of backlash of like, what is this pregnant woman doing on the cover and blah, blah, blah. And why is she naked and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I don't remember that. But I it's one of those things that like, I don't remember this happening, but also like, it doesn't surprise me in the least.
Oh, not even a little bit.
No, gross.
But the article inside made her out to be sort of like a diva and difficult. And I believe it was on the set of Ghost, they talk about how she had like a potter come in and like teach her how to pot.
Yeah, of course she did.
And like all these other things, like production provided that for her. It wasn't like she was correct. Like, I don't know how to. Yeah. So someone went.
But also even if she was, it's fine.
Right.
We're gonna spend so much time on Ghost in a few minutes that I don't want to blow my ghost wad too early, but like, whoo. Yeah, of course she did, because that scene's fucking perfect. Because it is perfect. That movie is exceptional.
It is exceptional.
Cinema,
if you will. But yeah, anyway, the press sort of dubbed her that. They dubbed her Gimme More because they thought she was like difficult and hard to work with. And
of course.
Really, she was far from it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think because, and you know, not to go too far deep in about the author, I remember that Demi Moore and Bruce Willis were a thing. But so much of my cultural experience with Demi Moore is her with Ashton Kutcher instead.
Correct.
So to me, she's like a chill ass cougar.
Right. Exactly.
She's just a woman that fucked that dude from Punk'd for years. Years. They had such a long relationship.
6 years.
That is a long time.
It is a long time.
I thought it was longer, honestly, but still 6 years is quite a bit.
It felt like a very long time. I feel like it was because it was a majority of our adolescence.
Yes, so. Yes. It's like such a window in our life that it's like maybe those 6 years. What do you remember offhand what they are?
Oh, God. She says she's very good with dates in this. It was like 2003, 2004.
Yeah, through 2009. I was running this morning and that's when most of my workout music exists. And I just realized like that is culture to me.
Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore.
Not just Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore, but those years, like 2003 to 2009, I was at my best self. I actually think deeply I wasn't as a person, but culturally, pop culture wise, that's me at my peak.
Like you knew the most?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just very in the zeitgeist. And mm-hmm. I keep thinking like, man, I can't wait for oldies radio stations to play the music of the 2000s. Like, yes. I've given up on modern culture in a lot of ways, at least musically. Okay, so Demi Moore, culture, Ashton Kutcher. Yeah, like to me, she's very chill. So it's interesting that people see her in that light.
Well, I think she was also sort of coming up in Hollywood at a time where the roles that women her age were being offered had that like second wave feminism agency
mm-hmm.
in the sense that like they were roles.
Yeah, they were just roles.
And it was sort of like, you should be thankful that you have this opportunity. And anytime a woman tried to advocate for herself.
Yeah, for sure.
Or not even that, but just like, you know, she's still very much from like casting couch age of Hollywood, I think.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Am I right in thinking, you know, I'm going to ask you this question and then we're going to do a book in 60 seconds because you might tell me the answer. But am I right in thinking that she was kind of like a Brat Pack aged kid?
She's
in St. Elmo's Fire, right?
She is. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
she is.
That's a whole movie that the exists.
Brat Pack.
Yeah. So that explains like a lot of why people have opinions about her.
That view of her. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And she had that like cohort of kids.
Mm-hmm. And the men in that cohort could and did do whatever they want and are still quite successful and have successfully rebranded themselves several times over, even though they did terrible, truly despicable things. And it's amazing we forgave them, but sure. In even in the way that I've described Demi Moore so far, it's like cougar. Like I've used the word cougar. I'm a big believer of like taking back cougar, but I can see how like the like way that other people viewed Demi Moore might not be the most positive, and fuck them.
Yeah. Like I know my mom always had a negative view of her, I guess because she, well.
Oh, I bet I have no doubt that it's that cover. It's that naked pregnant cover for your mom.
I'm sure it's that. And it's like the roles that she was offered in like the late 80s that were like, there's this one where she like plays this young mother who has to start becoming a sex worker to like make money for her child. And then my mom didn't like G.I. Jane.
Of course. That's actually like G.I. Jane is what I was like.
Yeah, that's my first like point of cultural reference for Demi Moore is G.I. Jane.
Sure. All right. Kara, you read Inside Out by Demi Moore.
I did.
I am so excited to hear more about it. So will you tell us the story of this book in 60 seconds?
I will.
Your time starts now.
The structure of this book is actually a frame story, and it starts with her in almost present day. She tells a story about almost passing out at this party and asking herself the question, how did I get here? How did I get here? And then she goes back and she tells us. She talks about her tumultuous childhood, how she moved around all over the U.S., sometimes twice in one school year. She learned that her father wasn't her father. She got pimped out by her mother. She started a relationship with a guy in his 20s when she was 16 and got married to him when she was 18. She talks about how, in order to like break away from the chaotic home life, she tried to strike out on her own to do modeling and acting and finally learned how to stand on her own 2 feet. She talks about how all of this, made her develop some problems with alcohol and substance abuse. She talks about her marriage to Bruce Willis and the birth of their 3 kids. She talks about her various career choices and successes, her earning a reputation as being difficult, her taking a break from acting to be a mom, her marrying and divorcing Ashton Kutcher, his various infidelities, and then her sort of relapse. And she answers the question.
Keep going. Say the last thing again because I talked over you.
It's okay. And then she brings it back to that moment at the beginning and answers, how did I get here? And honestly, it's like the most effective like climax of a book.
Wow.
It's written so well. Like,
did she have a ghostwriter?
She did, who I think is probably responsible for the structure.
Structure sounds incredible.
Yes. In a similar, or I would say similarly to Mariah Carey, she had that experience of a very tumultuous, very chaotic home life.
Yeah.
Always wanted to do her own thing, did her own thing for a while, but then found out that like she was still being controlled. And so when she was finally felt like she was able to do her own thing.
Breaking out of cycles of control though is like so hard for people. And it's so common to fall back in, and even for like victims to become the perpetrators of that, like all of that, if that's how you start in life, like takes a lot of work. And not to constantly quote previous celebrities we've talked about, but like it makes me think of Carrie Fisher and the idea of like relapse in general, and how it's, you know, abusive relationships are a form of thing that you can relapse into the same way that like an addiction is.
Absolutely. And she talks about how a question that is like constantly running through her mind her whole life is it okay that I'm here? Like she had very young parents. And so it always sort of felt like she and her younger brother were like a burden. Like they were trying to do their thing. And like she and her brother were inconveniencing them. And she just like always felt like she was in spaces where she wasn't supposed to be. And so it was the like am I allowed to be here question as in like, is this okay? But then also the like just existential question of like, is it okay that I exist? Like,
fuck.
Yeah. It's
wow, Demi.
This is such a good book. And she's obviously like clearly like talked to some people and like talked through things, because her answer to how did I get here is very like goes back like generationally. And she's like, I got here because I had a grandmother who put up with a womanizing husband who was so charming and good looking and charismatic. And she felt like she had no choice but to tolerate it because she married it. I got here because I had a mother who married the love of her life, but then lived in a state of total love-hate dysfunction with him until he ended his own life. I got here because I am the product of a power play by my mom to get my dad back on her side. They did what they always did when they found themselves in trouble. They lied. And it just like all these like little things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Way to go. This is one that, you know, we we're reading so much more, like sheer number of words I've read in the past 6 months is more than usual for me, but it doesn't leave a lot of time for fun reading or to like read each other's books. So yeah, but this is one that I will want to read at some point.
And it moves pretty quickly. Like she has a ghostwriter, but like, you can tell, we talked about this with Mariah, like you can tell when someone has like a natural flow and a storytelling voice.
Yep.
And she definitely has that.
Wow. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to dive deep.
It's so great. We've touched on this because you and I both love her. But Carrie, will you give us your summary of about the author and how you have context for one Miss Demi Moore?
All right. I warned Kara about this last week as we were doing our Guess That Author segment, but I'm basically just going to do a type 5 to a type 10 on the film Ghost. Sure, there are other ways you could know Demi Moore. You might know G.I. Jane. You might know St. Elmo's Fire. You might be familiar with her relationship with punk star Ashton Kutcher. But for me, it comes down to one film and one film only. And that is the perfect, probably in my top 5 movies of all time, cinephiles at me, Ghost. Ghost is a perfect movie. I am sexually attracted to every single person in Ghost. This includes the actor that plays Willie Lopez. I know that one's tough. That includes the one scene where Whoopi Goldberg is watching Arsenio Hall on TV. Absolutely. Still down. There, every single person that is in Ghost, I would smash. I love them all. Tony Goldwyn is a complicated man who I'm sure at some point someone will write a book that touches on him more. But again, Mr. Tony Goldwyn, would smash. Patrick Swayze, an icon, a legend. Ditto is everything. Whoopi truly earned that Oscar.
Like, she did.
She got an Oscar for Oda Mae Brown, and I'm so glad. Because I think if Ghost were made today, that role wouldn't be treated with such respect. Like, there's like that role wouldn't get it now. And I'm so glad it did. It's perfect. But all of this is to say, we're going to spend some time now on Demi Moore. Demi Moore is so stunning in this movie. It's a real, this is what I wish I looked like, / also who I want to be with energy. Short hair queen. She got her hair cut before the movie. Oh, I bet that's one of the reasons why people think she's fucking difficult. Go fuck yourself, because they wanted it to be long hair. You know what? Short hair is awesome. Long hair culture is fine. Do what you want with your hair. But women who have short hair are my kindred spirits. I identify with them. It is, I'm not going to do anything about how, no, I am. There's only been one contestant in like the history of The Bachelor that's had short hair. And it's just a bummer. Like where are there? Why do you all have extensions? Why? Demi Moore showed you what beauty was. And you just went, huh? No, I'm not going to do that. You're just like, let me add some more. I need more length. No one needs that much length. You're not a fucking mermaid. No. Sorry to long haired fans. Do what you want with your hair. I'm just a short hair queen with my girl Demi Moore. The performance she gives when she does the, I can do it almost all word for word, but I won't. And it is, I picked up your shirts this morning, that speech where she's talking about the dry cleaning and she's just, she's crying and she's talking about how she cried and she didn't know why and how the dry cleaner didn't know that he had died. And it's so good. It's so good. Here's the one flaw of Ghost. I didn't know that I was going to talk about this flaw. No, because it's not a flaw, because what I was about to say is Demi Moore's character, why are you staying with Patrick Swayze's character if he can't muster up an I love you, if that man just says ditto? It is a problem. It is a flaw. But you know what? I've seen Patrick Swayze in that movie. As Patrick Swayze would say in interviews, women would come up to him on the street for years afterwards and just beg him to say ditto to them. Yeah. And you know what? They're right. So Demi Moore's character, you're fine. I'm glad. The opening of that movie, them like those men with their shirts off moving her sculptures through the room. Oh, okay. This is not really an about the author, but an about the film Ghost. If you have not watched Ghost, I believe it is on Hulu. It is exceptional. The graphics for part of it do not age super well, but it is the only flaw in an otherwise exceptional movie. I love it. Demi Moore gives a stirring performance. They all should have gotten awards. Every single one of them deserved an award for that film. It's chef's kiss. And then she went on to do other things, but to me, it's that.
Oh.
It's that. It's Molly.
I love that.
Molly, you in danger, girl.
Iconic. Like, just absolute classic.
Okay, tell me what you know about Demi Moore.
Well, like a lot of things, movies that came out in the late 80s, early 90s, I did not see until about 5 years ago. But I have seen it now, and I love Ghost. I think it's excellent. I think prior to that, my knowledge of her was just like, I had like a cultural awareness of her, mostly through the negative opinions of my mother.
Sure.
In the same way that like she hated Winona Ryder for shoplifting. My mom hated Demi Moore for like cutting off all her hair for G.I. Jane.
Totally. Yeah. That makes sense.
And also probably posing naked on the cover of Vanity Fair.
My mom hated Meryl Streep for years because of her performance in Kramer versus Kramer. Like not even for something she did as an actress, but just because she was so good in Kramer versus Kramer that my mom didn't forgive her for years.
She was like, why did this woman leave her child?
Yes, exactly.
That sounds exactly like something my mom would do.
Yeah, it's really like where they overlap is their grudges against celebrities.
It's true. Something that I mentioned in my Guess the Author last week is that she voiced a character in one of my favorite animated movies. She voiced Esmeralda.
Oh, yeah.
From The Hunchback of Notre Dame. She was not the singing voice. I think that was, I want to say, for some reason in my brain just now, I was like, Liz Calloway? But that's not right.
No, Liz Calloway is Anastasia and maybe a few others. Very few. Before Frozen is really one of the first movies where their singing voices are the same as their other performances, but Megara in Hercules is voiced by Susan Egan all the way throughout. She's maybe the first who had done it before Frozen.
That's right. Well, the woman who sang the song that her character sings was Heidi Mollenhauer, was not Demi Moore, but Demi Moore is her like characters.
God help the Aztecs.
The
outcasts. Okay. This is the reason why I say that is because my sister as children rewrote that whole song. Like it's a really dumb song parody that at some point we're singing about pork fried rice. It's just like, you know, early song parody slash what most of what Weird Al still does that is like this word kind of sounds like this word, so we'll sing it wrong on purpose.
And then make everything about that.
I thought in my head, I was like, is it Outcasts or Aztecs? And I was like, oh, it's Aztecs. That makes sense. And so that's what I said.
Amazing. Oh, God. Well, yes, that song was my frame of reference for her. Of course, I had the cultural reference of her dating Ashton Kutcher. I remember, like, for all of my adolescence, you would go to a store and you would see their faces plastered on Us Weekly and People and Stars and, like, everything. I realized like 5 or 6 years ago that I hadn't like seen her in a ton of movies though. Like I knew who she was like as a cultural person,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, then I guess it's been a little longer than that. But like I saw St. Elmo's Fire the year that you're like supposed to watch St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh.
And was like, she's an incredible actor. Like she's amazing. She's sort of not even like the main character, but like her character has sort of like an undercurrent throughout. And then sort of like the climax of it. Have you seen it?
I have years ago. Okay. I went through a phase. If I had done a reel about the author, instead of just telling you about Ghost, I had a phase where I got really into like I saw The Breakfast Club at the right age. And so I decided to get really into 80s movies with like young people. I decided to go hard in the Brat Pack. Mm-hmm. And
most of which does not hold up anymore.
No, it doesn't. And St. Elmo's Fire, just, I watched that one. I was like, wait, maybe these movies just aren't good. They're just filled with hot people. And I don't remember the plot of St. Elmo's Fire. I just remember being like, this?
I saw St. Elmo's Fire in within a year of graduating from college. And that's
yeah, like that seems like a better time to see it.
In the movie, it's like these five or six friends who like were in college together, and it's like their first year out of school.
They also do drugs in that movie, right?
Lots of drugs, yes.
Yeah, I think, so I think I saw it when I was 16, and for like, not that I'm that different from it now, but I was so scared of drugs that I like couldn't engage with the movie. So scared.
Gotcha. And it's so it's like, you know, some of them are like partying hard in like, you know, we're adults now. And some of them are like jobs and like going to work in the morning, and like Mare Winningham is in love with Rob Lowe. And
yes, I do remember that. That's one of the first Mare Winningham performances I saw.
Icon.
Mare Winningham.
Icon Mare Winningham. Star of stage and screen, Mare Winningham.
Star of the last thing I saw before the pandemic, which is one of the worst things I've ever seen. Girl from the North Country. Oh, Mare Winningham. I don't know why you agreed to do that, but okay.
She got to sing all the good songs though, right?
Yes. Yes, she did. I'm sure. I imagine Mare Winningham's contract negotiations for Girl from the North Country to go something like this. Here are a list of Bob Dylan's hits. I will only sing these. If you give them to someone else, I walk.
God Christ. Well, anyway.
Okay. Tell me more. Tell me more about Miss Demi Moore.
But yeah, that's pretty much the context that I have for her. And then I know that like in the mid 2000s, when like celebrities' humanitarian efforts were a big thing, I know that she was a person who was like at the forefront of that, because something that she mentions in here, which I totally forgot, Ashton Kutcher is one of the first celebrities to like be obsessed with Twitter.
Oh, I did know that.
Which I like knew, but forgot. Remember when his handle was A+K?
I do.
But so like, because he was using it, she started using it, and she was like, it was the first time that I felt like I could control the narrative of like how the public perceived me, and I didn't have to like do it through the tabloids or do it through interviews.
So interesting, because Mariah had such a similar experience. I mean, hers was pre-social media, but like having a space to just, it's that busy Phillips said the same kind of thing of like having a space to just present yourself. I think at least in early social media felt so freeing to a generation of people. Yeah. And then there's a whole nother group of people who, yeah. And even like, even now, I don't know that they would view it as freeing in the same way, because like every celebrity has a social media manager at this point.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I thought that was interesting to sort of be, because she's a person who's like been in the zeitgeist for so long. She's just like sewn into a lot of these like cultural memories that I feel like I have, but not at like the forefront. And so to like re-experience some of those moments with her context and with her at the center was interesting. And it made this book very enjoyable.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I believe it's time to play our favorite game. It's time to play Guess a That, a Chapter. Demi Moore's book is a sensible 256 pages, but we don't have time to cover the entire thing. So instead, we will pick one iconic chapter that stood out the most, which means it's time to play Guess That Chapter.
All right, let's go.
You probably know what this is about, but here we go.
We'll find out.
The characters are Demi Moore, Bruce Willis,
okay,
Patrick Swayze, and Emilio Estevez.
Oh my God.
I don't have a setting. LA.
Who cares? Now, do I know what this is about? This is incredible. Okay, so it's, I'm going through so much. I forget that Demi Moore has so many, because of the Brat Pack, it means she's also connected to Coach Bombay himself, which I'm sure is not the way Emilio wants someone to describe him, but it's better than me calling him Charlie Sheen's more sane brother. So deal with it, Emilio. Did Demi Moore and Emilio Estevez date during the Brat Pack years? Kara's nodding her head. So here's what's happening. This is, I swear to God, if Demi Moore and Bruce Willis fell in love while she was filming Ghost, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. Kara's shaking her head no to that, so it's not that. Okay, okay. I can't handle when people fall in love around movies. This is a real nice side story. Yesterday, I watched the documentary about Galaxy Quest.
There's a documentary about it?
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. You should watch it. It's so worth it. I almost texted you about it. It was great. But
one of my favorite films.
Oh, a perfect film.
A perfect, a literally perfect film.
Truly perfect.
Yes.
And
they teach it in like screenwriting school.
Yeah, it's exceptional. The pitch itself, so clean, so easy, and then just impeccably made.
Everything that's sewn in pays off later.
Yes, everything works.
The perfect little asides. Anyway, sorry. This is not a Galaxy Quest podcast.
But Tim Allen had a personal trainer during that film. And in it, they asked, well, Tim, do you remember who your personal trainer was? And to make me feel positive feelings for Tim Allen takes work. But he fell in love with his personal trainer, who is now his wife, on the set of Galaxy Quest. Aww. So love was born there.
That's really sweet.
If anybody falls in love on the set of a movie, it's over. It's... with the exception of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, because I do not care about... I used to say I do not care about anyone involved, but apparently I care about Jennifer Aniston now. Who knew? All right, very distracted. Let me go back to our characters at hand. Patrick Swayze personally offers Demi Moore Ghost and fights and advocates for her. And she's trying to break away from... her Brat Pack image, even though I think G.I. Jane came out before it. Basically, I have no idea. Okay, I basically give up.
Well, you got your wish. This is the chapter about Ghost.
Hell yeah.
Let's go. Sort of like the surrounding projects that like led to that moment and then what that moment was like. So let me paint you a word picture.
Please do. I'm so happy.
So at this time, Demi Moore and Bruce Willis had been married for a couple years. They had their first child, Rumor.
Rumor has it.
And she had like taken some time off, basically.
I know that we shouldn't care about people's bodies, but Demi Moore is in Ghost after having children. She looked like that after she had a kid. The fuck?
There is... okay, so sidebar for context, one of the many coping mechanisms that she's developed over the years is an eating disorder.
Now I feel like shit.
No, don't feel bad. Because she started out modeling, she had this like very, and very young, she had this idea of like what her body was supposed to look like.
I'm sure.
She was always supposed to look like how she looked when she was 17. So after the birth of her first kid, and especially after the birth of her second kid, she was like exercising like crazy, so much to the point that she like took her second kid to the doctor and they were like, why isn't she growing? And they were like, you're exercising too much and your body is absorbing all of the like, nutrients from the milk. And so you don't have any, so you can't like give any to your baby because you're exercising too much.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she, yes, has always...
Well, this is why it's problematic to like worship a celebrity body. Like, even though, yes, do I wish I looked like Demi Moore in Ghost?
Who doesn't?
Now I know that that's like an incredibly unhealthy thing. And I will try to remind myself of that when I watch Ghost and wonder, why can't I look like that? And the reason why is because I am not going to do unhealthy things to change the way my body looks. So lesson learned.
She had taken some time off when she and Bruce got married. And this was one of the first projects back that she was starting. And Bruce was like, I don't think this is going to work. Like, if I'm working on a movie and you're working on a movie, like, who's going to take care of the kid and blah, blah. Like, he has some kind of antiquated, like, ideas.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm not surprised about Bruce Willis not being a feminist king.
Yeah, who's surprised? I mean, does Bruce Willis eat pussy? Probably.
Okay, here's my actual pitch. He does it on, like, special occasions, and he thinks he's really good. Like, yes. He thinks he doesn't have to do it all the time, because when he does, he's like, oh, you're good for a month now, sweetie.
God, gross.
Exactly.
But she talks about the beginning of their relationship and how he made her feel so, like, safe and valued and, like, treated her like a princess. And that's, she comes to find out what he wanted is, like, a wife that he can just, like, dote upon and take care of. And she just, like, hangs out and he goes and works.
All right. Here's a problematic take. I don't think I know I don't actually want that, but God, I would love to not work. I would love to not work.
Everyone wants it a little bit. Or to just be able to like work on the things that you want to do.
I think the problem is that like with that doting upon like mentality, there also is an expectation that you need to show like endless gratitude for that. And you have to like become a model of domesticity. And that happened with Tony Romo and that happened with Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson. Was he had a very antiquated idea of what a wife was supposed to be. He wanted someone who would clean and take care of things. And what I really want in life is to, I just want to be independently wealthy so that like, I don't have a job, but I also am not responsible for cleaning. That's not it.
No, that's fair. You're allowed to want that for yourself.
Preach, but
you're welcome.
I don't actually, I think probably after a month of doing it, I'd be over it and ready to dive back in. But
yeah, I feel like
just a sabbatical.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like a little wife sabbatical. But anyway, all that to say, she had taken some time off. She was nervous about going back to this project because she felt out of shape, like physically, emotionally, mentally. And she was like, I couldn't have picked a better thing to go back to. She was like, she in her mind is like, that was my first like big girl movie because she was a producer on it. She like really had some say. Like she was a person sitting down watching dailies with a director every day.
Wow.
Like she wasn't just like a name producer. Like she really had some like input.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
We talked about this, but the idea, when we were talking about Busy Phillips, but like the idea that you love this thing, but you know, someone was really unhappy doing it. Mm-hmm. That makes me so happy that Ghost was a positive experience for Demi Moore. Like,
yeah. She has only nice things to say about Patrick Swayze. She's like,
how could you not?
It was like a 20th anniversary recently, or maybe a 25th mm-hmm. anniversary. And, the time of this 20th maybe. And, she was like, there was some like B-roll footage that they were showing of like behind the scene, or maybe it was like a tribute to Patrick Swayze. Anyway,
sure.
Like B-roll, like behind the scenes footage from when they were filming the movie. And she's like, I watched the two of us interact and like, we hadn't known each other for very long at that point, but like, he was so easy to talk to. He was so kind. He was so generous. And she talks about previously, she had done this movie with, Sean Penn and Robert De Niro.
Mm.
And maybe that was the first movie back where Bruce Willis was like, this wasn't going to work. It was like immediately before Ghost.
Also, does Bruce Willis just not like that she was getting good movies, that she was just like working with like big deal?
It was quite an Angelina and Billy Bob situation. Like they were both sort of on the rise, but like,
yeah, sure.
Yet when they got married, but like, I think he definitely preferred to be the like name.
Yeah, of course.
Not that he like denied her success, but like, I'm sure there was an element of jealousy, you know?
Yeah. There's no way that that doesn't creep into your work. It's like, it's why I couldn't possibly date someone who had the same profession or career goals as me, because I'm just a jealous person. Like there's no way I would be able to like not map our levels of success at the same time.
No, I know what you mean. And so she talks about how on that film with Sean Penn and Robert De Niro, the vibe on set was awful. And she like hated it the whole time. She said
Sean Penn was difficult to work with? Who would have guessed?
She was like, I was so excited to work on this movie. And then it turned out to be like such a bummer. She was like, so here I was like going to do Ghost. She's like, and I wasn't sure what to expect. And she's like, but it was such a positive experience. And so this is where Emilio Estevez comes in. So in the Brat Pack days, when she was dating Emilio Estevez, he comes from, you know, like a big acting family.
Obviously. Oh, does he?
And she would like go to dinner at their house. And she was like, they were so kind and so welcoming. And she was like, but I just felt like I never had anything to contribute because like, I didn't go to acting school. Like I had never really been formally trained. You know, I had taken like one or two classes, but like they would talk about acting and she was like, and I had nothing to contribute. And she was like, okay. And they never made me feel bad for that. But like, she was like, I just felt like I'm an actor. Like, shouldn't I know some of this stuff? To which I say the best actors, and I say this all the time,
yep.
The best actors have never been trained.
Correct.
The best singers. I mean, like, yes, there is like technique involved, but a true, like emotionally.
Yes.
Interesting performance.
Is not someone who's been doing it for 45 years.
Agreed. Yes. Which is why I will advocate for a movie musical. I mean, like, you know, does it annoy me when they cast names? Yes. Do I love seeing a person who hasn't been trained in singing?
Yes.
Singing.
Well, I think it depends on what you want from your singers. If you want an acting performance delivered through song, you do not go to the best singer in the room. because they are focused on
technique,
sounding pretty, like, and that's just not what I want. Here, I'm making a mental list of things to parts of this story I want to franchise, and one of them is to just completely throw the structure out the window. What the fuck? Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen, and Emilio Estevez just being like, oh my craft. You're Gordon Bombay, bitch. I mean, I love him. Don't get me wrong. He's my favorite of the Estevez clan, but
yes.
Oh my God. That just sounds so douchey. That's terrible. Patrick Swayze, you're coming off like a king in this.
She makes it sound like it happened frequently. Maybe it only happened a couple of times, but she was like, they were just very like cultured people who had like always grown up in show business. And she was like, and I just felt like very amateurish compared to them.
That's so interesting because I don't know. I just think of the performances that stand out in my mind. Demi Moore's stand out so much more than any of the Sheen Estevez family.
Well, there you go. One of the things that she remembers the Estevez Sheen family talking about is how they hated it when actors would like scrunch up their faces when they cried. They were like, that's not how people cry, which is true. You know, it's the mm-hmm, whole thing sure. of it's much more interesting to watch someone try not to cry than it is to watch someone cry.
Yes.
That old adage.
Classic adage. It's much, everyone's always saying in every situation, not just acting, but it's much more interesting to watch someone try not to cry.
Yes. You know, and I'm so aware as I'm saying this as a person who did go to theater school is like my barometer for what is and isn't like.
I mean, to be fair, we went to the Demi Moore School of Theater than in the quality true. Of the training. So
that's very true.
There's that.
The Demi Moore School of Theater. Oh my God.
The crying.
Yes. So she's like remembering this as she's reading the script for Ghost, because it's one of the first things where she's had to really like be emotional, i.e.
yeah.
the shirts scene. She's like, it was the first time that kind of like nuanced performance was being asked of me and I didn't know how to do it. So she went to an acting teacher who sort of like, you know, helped her with some things and taught her some techniques and gave what she thought was a decent performance. You know, she wasn't like, wow, I killed that. But like, felt good about it. And she remembers like at the premiere of the movie, watching it and being like, whew, I didn't do the like face scrunch up thing. Like to her, it was like a hallmark of like, oh, maybe I'm a real actor. Like,
that's so sweet because it's so much more than that to me, but like, I respect that she didn't see that and was like, I'm the shit. Look at me acting. But instead was like, oh, cool. I did this one thing right.
Exactly. And then she talks about how years later she was at some panel for something that she was producing. And she describes him as a young journalist who I imagine to be like a Louis Peitzman type dude who stood up and asked her, how does it feel to be the most iconic crier in cinema history?
Love.
And she was like, that's so sweet of you to say. And he references Ghost. And then he also references that moment in Charlie's Angels Full Throttle when a single tear rolls down her cheek and she goes, I was great. He was like, you're so good at crying. And she's like, it's so sweet that you say that. And then she launches into this story.
Oh, I love that.
So yeah, there was like a fun, like full circle moment and her realizing it was also sort of like the beginning, even though she and Bruce stayed together for several years after this, it was sort of her beginning of the realization of the fracturing of their relationship.
Well, she got such independence out of this experience that that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have kids, it takes people a long time to make those decisions, apparently, based on all the books we've read.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I've learned is, like, once you have kids, your relationship, a bad relationship takes a lot longer to get out of.
Yeah. Well, and, like, Bruce Willis lives across the street from them.
Yeah, they have, like, a pretty great co-parenting model, and I feel like it didn't take them long to develop that. Like, it doesn't seem like there was a lot of drama, at least the way it was presented to the public. But
because they as a family never really lived in LA. They like bought a house in Montana and that's where they lived.
Wow.
So when they split, Bruce Willis bought the house across the street and the kids would just sort of like go back and forth as they felt like it.
That's very cool. Yeah. Very chill.
And then they were all teenagers by the time she started dating Ashton Kutcher. So
yes, I vividly remember that. I remember like tabloids and articles about like Ashton hanging out with the kids and like, cause he was closer in age to her children than her, I think. Right.
And yeah. So. He was 25 and her oldest daughter was 17.
Super weird. But it seems to have worked for them for a time.
Yeah. And I mean, she talks about how, like, in the beginning, he really was, I mean, ultimately his infidelity is the reason that they split. And, you know, this isn't a podcast to debate efficiency of monogamy. She talks in the beginning about how he really did, like, see her and, like, wanted to be a part of her life, wanted to be a part of her kid's life. He had had a really great stepdad. And so that was something that he felt like he had a model for. He was like, I know how to, like, meaningfully be a part of someone's life, but not being their biological parent.
That's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. So the kids even started calling him MOD, which was my other dad.
Oh.
So I thought that was cute. But yeah, it really seems like it was fine until it wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
And it's that whole thing of they were fine for a while and then the age difference wasn't a factor, but then it sort of started to become one because as she was settling into middle age, he was like our age, you know?
There is such a thing that men tend to go through of like, I'm cool with this. I'm cool with this. I'm cool with this. And then they decide they want babies. And it's like, now I need a young, fertile woman to make that happen.
Well, when Demi Moore was 42, she got pregnant by Ashton Kutcher and ultimately miscarried, unfortunately. But it was a turning point in their relationship because they were like, is this something that we want? Like to have a kid of our own? And that initially solidified them and made them stronger. And they were like, yes, this is what we want.
But then he couldn't stop thinking about it and it became less important for her. Oh, that I don't know if it's just a trope, but it does seem like a thing happens where like a switch happens for like the number of men I've seen both like depicted through media, but also some in real life who are like, I don't want kids. I don't want kids. I don't want kids. And then like 6 months later, it's like, me and my fiance are pregnant. We're going to do this. We're starting a family. And it's like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
I often think that men have a more complicated biological clock than women do.
Oh, interesting. Well, it's also because they're not being asked about it every year of their lives, you know?
Mm-hmm. So they just get to decide they want to. Like, they just get to be like, this is an interesting idea.
Methinks a father I shall be.
You love Tobias Funke bit.
I am Tobias Funke in a lot of ways. I've just come to accept it.
In the best ways, I think.
In the best ways, yeah. In
all of his ways. I think it's a very good thing.
But yeah, she even talks about how like his opinions and stuff would change on a dime. Like they committed to each other after she had like found out about his infidelity. They like recommitted to each other. He like wrote her this beautiful long email of like, you're the one I want to be with. Like, let's really work on this. That was on like a Tuesday. And then on a Sunday, she saw in the tabloids that he was like photographed with some 25-year-old. And she called him and she was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, like you said, who are we to comment on the values of monogamy?
And people are allowed to change their minds.
People are allowed to change their minds, but not so frequent, not to cause whiplash. And like you changing your mind still has to be considerate. Like there's a lack of consideration for your partner. And you do, you make a choice at some point. And whether you do this monogamously or something else, where you come up with a deal and you come up with a plan and you do have an obligation to stick to it. And if you feel like you're not going to, you need to talk about it first. It's yes, like, and I talk first, act second. And it seems like that was not the case for Mr. Kutcher.
It's also that thing of like, I feel like so often when people are like, I changed my mind, what actually happened is that they became comfortable saying what they had already felt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think if you get to a point where you're having that conversation of, can we be faithful to each other?
Yeah.
You already know the answer and you know what you want the answer to be, but like,
well, that's what it sounds like. And I think about what you just said about the stepfather thing. He had this idea of who he wanted to be. He really like he viewed his stepdad as such like a role model. He liked that idea of himself. It just wasn't something he could actually live up to.
Yeah.
And I imagine when you're crazy famous and when people are throwing themselves at you, it's a lot harder to live up to all those things.
Agreed.
I'm just going to say it's a lot easier to be faithful when you're an average looking person.
That's probably also true. If you're like objectively hot, it's probably hard to be monogamous.
Yeah. If you're hot and have money and have all these advantages, I do think it's like temptation is just around a lot more for you. Like
for sure.
And again, I'm not pitying celebrities who created the television show Punk'd. Like I'm not here to do that. I'm not here to show sympathy to Ashton Kutcher. No. But at the same time, I can see how their relationship, they'd be presented with more challenges than in my own. It's just different.
Than an average person.
Yes, yes. Than most people in their typical day-to-day lives experience. Yes.
Agreed. 1,000%.
Well,
shall we research?
Mama, let's research. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Celebrity Book Club.
Presented in part by America's Got Talents. An undisclosed streaming platform is hosting a nationwide search for the next viral pet sensation. Can your dog tap dance? Does your bird play the violin? Does your ferret have literally any skill? Send in your audition to America's Got Talents, available in quick bites coming this fall.
Mama, what did you research?
Okay. I started by looking up Emilio Estevez because it's always the right time to look up Emilio Estevez. But I wanted to make sure if I was going to shit on his family talking about acting at the dinner table, that there wasn't like a secret Estevez or a family lineage that I had forgotten about. But no, there isn't. It's really just Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen, and Emilio. Like, so first of all, I'm not here to evaluate someone's mental health, but I cannot imagine that Charlie Sheen had a lot to add to that discussion.
Agreed.
Number two, Martin Sheen is a fine actor, but not a great actor. Not like peak cinema.
No.
Cinephiles, at me if you think that Martin Sheen is doing something that I am forgetting about. So I would argue that among the three of them, the one whose career I'm most invested in, / who I think is the best performance, is Emilio himself. And half of Emilio's star performance. Like, if you want to talk about, like, actual great performance, it is The Mighty Ducks, but I get that people aren't ready to talk about it. So let's talk about The Breakfast Club. Let's talk about the fact that he has to cry because he tapes that little boy's buns together. Like, and that's what he's in detention for. And they keep using the word buns. And again, at me if I'm only thinking of the like put on TV version and they just keep saying buns, but I'm pretty sure in the real version they call it buns too. And so he just is sobbing, talking about taping a boy's buns together, which, okay. So to me, you have nothing to worry about.
That's the moral of this.
And the other thing that I looked up is Demi Moore's Wikipedia. And the big thing that I realized is we haven't talked about A Few Good Men and how great she is in A Few Good Men. And granted, Aaron Sorkin has this thing that he does where every single woman is just, you don't understand. You don't get what this is all the time. Like, and so it's just Tom Cruise berating Demi Moore saying like, you're a woman. How could you possibly know the truth? Let me be wordy to you until you see that I am right. Mm-hmm. But she did that very well.
Yes.
And A Few Good Men is, it's such early Sorkin that those tropes aren't yet as despicable as they are now.
Yes. In a movie setting, I feel like it's much more palatable than like a TV show where it happens for however many seasons.
Yes. And like, there was at least the issue of like army and ranks, and there were power dynamics that almost made it more believable.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you realize that he does it in every single workplace setting, you're like, bro, what is this?
Oh, this is just your shtick. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, she talks about how the execs for that movie were like, why is her character a woman? And they were like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, if they're like not going to sleep together, like, why is her character a woman?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And also like, I want to pretend like we've come so far, but it still is revolutionary where you have a man and a woman working closely together and they don't bang.
They don't sleep together.
Oh my God. Like, I really wish we had come farther, but I'm sure that happens in countless meetings every day.
I'm sure.
Mama, what did you research?
I researched Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
Great choice.
A thing that I was not allowed to watch as a child. And now I understand why, because it would have absolutely made me gay way sooner.
Yep, because that's how it works. Media is what made you gay. You want to go on the record with that?
I do. I would like go on the record now and say I was transformed to the site. No, I'm kidding. I would have realized I was gay a lot earlier had I watched this movie. I would have watched Demi Moore slowly drag her open mouth down Cameron Diaz's cheek while holding a gun to her head and been like, this is for me.
I mean, that could make anybody gay.
Right? So I'm sitting here watching this, and then I realized that that was not the scene that I was looking for. I was looking for that I was never good, I was great.
Well, I'm glad you saw both.
Glad I saw both.
I think you personally needed both of those.
Agreed. I totally agree. I was like, oh, I need a minute. But yes. Also, I just forgot that Demi Moore just sort of like exudes sexuality even when she doesn't mean to.
Yeah.
She's just like a very, I wouldn't even say like a sexual or like sensual person, but I think she's just, she has one of those faces and one of those like energies.
I want her to have a very like Glenn Close sexual, like erotic thriller phase. Like I want her to like lean into the MILF energy.
Yes,
and like please. Go give me some evil MILF. Like that's, that's
all I want.
Also like give me that and give me it in a franchise, like not to just jump ahead to can we franchise this, because this is a totally different thing, but cast Demi Moore as like the same way that Knives Out is going to become a series centered around Daniel Craig. Yes. Make Demi Moore a horny woman abusing her power in a variety of different contexts. And like, she just moves to the next town and like traps a bunch more men.
Does it all over again.
Or reboot The Graduate, like starring Demi Moore. Like,
honestly, why has it not happened? MILFs are having a moment right now.
When have MILFs ever not been having a moment in this community, the community of you and I? When are MILFs not having
ever a moment? Not having a moment? That's very accurate. It's always
JLo's 50. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Oh, good. But yeah, here we are, horny on main for Demi Moore as usual.
So horned up.
But that's what I looked up, and I'm so very glad that I did. And agreed, I would agree with the young journalist who asked her, how does it feel to be the most iconic crier in television history or in movie history? Because it's pretty iconic.
Yeah, I think she absolutely is.
Yeah. And there's, not to like fetishize pain or anything, but like there is a...
We've fetishized everything else about Demi Moore at this point. It's fine.
Not to be like, wow, her tragic story made her like able to really express emotion.
Sure.
But you can tell that she's like been through some shit.
And there is an interesting thing that I think has been happening in movies and television a lot lately, where in particularly with TV, but where writers and directors are now using your celebrity backstory, the celebrity's backstory, to inform the character. I was doing my monthly rewatch of the film Gone Girl and just thinking about
how much...
You watch
that every month?
Not religiously every month, but frequently. On my Hulu, here's what happened this week. On my Hulu, in the movie suggestions, it was just Hustlers and Gone Girl. And I stared at that screen for at least 10 minutes before I finally chose. They are two modern classics. Okay. It's cinema. Cinema. Whether it's Gone Girl or our fave The Morning Show, you take what you know about Ben Affleck and Jennifer Aniston and these people in these roles. And like in Gone Girl, you know that Ben Affleck has had like such troubled relationships. And like you're saying, all of this makes sense. Putting that layer in there makes sense.
You project that onto Nick. That's his name, right? Nick?
Yeah, Nick Dunn.
Yeah.
But like, if you have all of that layered in there, you have this preconceived notion of Demi Moore. And if you like put her in a role where she can interact with her sort of like famous representation, but as a different character, that feels like a thing I deeply want.
I would be all about that. I want her to have her prestige TV moment.
Oh my God. I give her an HBO Sunday night series. Like 6 to 8 episodes.
Nicole Kidman, no offense, but like you're on my TV too much.
I mean, I wish we had cast, this is terrible, sorry Nicole, but Demi Moore in The Undoing would have been a more interesting choice.
I haven't watched The Undoing, but I...
It is...
Is it good?
Fine. No, it's not good.
It looked like Big Little Lies 2.0, and so I was like...
It's fine. Yeah, but I would much rather, I want Demi Moore in a prestige series where she is like a MILF out to destroy someone's life.
That's ideal. That's all I want.
Can we just write it instead?
I was about to say, I was like, should we just write that? Or?
Yep. Stay tuned, guys. We'll be pitching to me more in a few months.
That'd be good. Just an unsolicited project appears on her Montana home doorstep. Well, I think we agree that we can franchise this, but would you like to play one last game?
Our most iconic? I would love to.
Let's
I would
play
love to.
6 Degrees of Laura Bell Bundy.
Let's fucking go. The greatest game of all time, blessed by the queen herself, Little Miss Woodscombe L, Laura Bell Bundy.
Do you have yours ready or should
I? Yeah, I'm good to go. I'm good to go.
Great. You go first then.
All right. Since I realized that Demi Moore was in A Few Good Men again, it goes this way. So Demi Moore stars in A Few Good Men with Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is in both Jerry Maguire and Rain Man with Bonnie Hunt. Bonnie Hunt plays the older version of Laura Bell Bundy in Jumanji. We haven't done a Jumanji in a while. I thought it was nice to bring it back.
Oh, I love that. Mine is one we also haven't done in a while.
Nice.
So Demi Moore, famously married to Ashton Kutcher. Ashton Kutcher was in Dude, Where's My Car with Jennifer Garner.
Wow. Great.
Jennifer Garner was in Felicity with Keri Russell. Keri Russell was on the Mickey Mouse Club with Britney Spears. Britney Spears was the other understudy in that off-Broadway show with Laura Bell Bundy.
Oh my God. Just incredible. Good work.
Our minds.
Our minds indeed. Well, that brings us to almost the end of our show. It's time to play our last little game. This one is for you, the listeners. Every week, Kara and I play Guess That Chapter, but this time it's your turn to play Guess That Author. Very small air horns. It's a shorter game. So each week we'll give you 3 clues about who we're reading next, and it will be your job to figure out if you can guess that author. We're going to do it a little different next week because Kara and I are both going to be reading this book. So get excited.
That, I think, in and of itself is a clue that this person matters enough both to us that we're both reading their book.
Yeah, I would say that this person is someone that both Kara and I really look up to. They are well-versed in the world of musical theater. And they enjoy a Disney theme park quite a bit. Those are your clues.
Those are your clues, folks. Enjoy. If you have a guess for next week's author, you can find us at Celeb Book Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Kara can be found on Twitter and Instagram at _KPRO. That's _KAYPRO.
Kara can be found on Twitter and Instagram at CFOST Talks A Lot. That's the letter CFOST Talks A Lot.
Thanks for listening to Celebrity Book Club.